It was really a combination of the vision that Larry had of running software on the web. He was very convinced that he used to joke with me in the early days of NetSuite. Well, you know, we had mainframes and then we had client server, and the next stage is web applications. And that's how people are going to run software for the next 1,000 years. I don't know what's going to happen after that, but for the next 1,000 years. So he had an enormous commitment back in 1998 to the idea of web-based software.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold 2 businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Evan Goldberg always wanted to build software since he was a little kid. As the founder of Oracle NetSuite, he understood that a business starts with an idea, but it succeeds because of the people. He grew NetSuite from a small office above a hair salon into a global organization that now works with more than 22,000 customers. A few years ago, it was acquired by Oracle. I wanted to start by asking Evan about his first business. He's been so successful with Oracle NetSuite, but like most entrepreneurs, success comes on the heels of maybe not so successful ventures. In fact, for Evan, he tried to start another business prior to NetSuite, but he was way ahead of his time. And unfortunately, or rather fortunately, he gave it another shot with NetSuite.
Yeah, I was in my late 20s. I had always, from the first time I sort of laid hands on a computer, wanted to have my own software company and build software that people would use on a daily basis. So when the internet started, it was about 1995, it seemed like a great time to try to do that. So I left and went out on my own.
And what type of business did you try and build?
Yeah, it was called Embed Software, and it was all about making it easy for mere mortals to create interactive websites. And you could say it was similar to Flash, but Flash took off, was bought by a large company, Macromedia, at the time. And so, you know, while we had a loyal following, we weren't able to build an ongoing business with it. But, you know, a lot of it is, one thing I learned is timing is everything.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. I'm curious how much you think, you know, and it's a question I've had with a lot of successful entrepreneurs, how much a part of it is actually luck with timing.
Absolutely, that's a critical factor. And we, you know, in that business, we didn't necessarily get the timing right. I mean, I still think there's a big need for people to be able to create interactive websites really easily. And so, you know, but it's just, and Flash had its time in the sun. But, you know, I think that, you know, if you looked at something like that today, it potentially could be successful. So I think luck of being at the right time, we were sort of at the wrong time because there was a competitor that was able to beat us out. And NetSuite, you know, which was my next venture, I think we nailed the timing.
Yeah, you guys hit on that one for sure. I do have a question. Aside from understanding about timing and luck, what were some of the other things you took from that experience that made you so successful with NetSuite?
Well, probably the most important thing was it was my first company, obviously, and I was flailing in the dark a little bit about how to run a company. It was definitely on-the-job training. And one of the things I learned was that the systems to help you when you're an entrepreneur in a fast-growing business were woefully lacking. I kind of imagined that big companies had these great systems that helped the main kind of maintain, you know, great access to all their information, know what's going on, be able to affect change really easily. That turns out not to entirely have been the case, but I was sure there wasn't anything for small companies because we had just a smorgasbord of systems to run our little business. I mean, you know, payroll was disconnected from the accounting functionality of the business, and we sold through a web store that was not connected. We had like 5 different customer lists, email was used for support. We had like a contact database that was for, you know, direct sales, and nothing worked together. You couldn't really get a handle on what was going on. And I saw that as a huge hole that I thought maybe potentially somebody could come along and fill. And so as we sort of flatlined a bit on the growth of the first company, we started thinking about, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to create a new company. And the founders of that company went along with me to start NetSuite.
And at that time, when you came to that conclusion, was it like a aha moment, or was it more of a buildup where you kind of were like, whoa, there's a huge opportunity here?
Well, I think as the business, you know, went along and I started to learn more about running a business and making payroll, and it started to grow in my head that maybe there might be an opportunity there. There were a lot of ideas going in my head, but as we started to think about what we might try next, fortunately, I had a partner who had a similar sort of idea in his head. It was a phone call from him, Larry Ellison, that was really the catalyst to say, okay, we're going to do this major U-turn.
Tell us about
a 90-degree turn.
Yeah. So, I mean, Larry obviously is an extremely smart guy and super successful and has been way ahead of the curve on most everything he's done. How did that call come about?
He was a somewhat passive investor in my first venture, which was great. I mean, we had a great relationship from like the first day I interviewed at Oracle coming out of college. So, you know, he helped me out financially on the first one, and he would call every once in a while and say, oh, he'd call it my graphic stuff. He'd say, how's your graphic stuff going? But it wasn't exactly like, you know, his passion, but, you know, it was great to have him involved. And that call came and he said, how's your graphic stuff going? And I said, nah, not so great. But I kind of think that I'd like to pivot because I'd like to build software for businesses. And he just was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I've been thinking about. You know what I would do right now if I were starting a company from scratch is I'd make basic accounting software for small companies and run it on the web, because that's how all applications are going to be run in the future. And I hadn't been thinking so much about the web-based application. I'd been more thinking about just sort of a business system for smaller companies. And I said, well, okay, accounting's great, but I also want to be able to think about my or have a system that helps me with my sales. And he's like, oh yeah, of course. You're going to want to do the front office stuff, but first we have to do back office. And also, I mean, these companies are going to need a web store and email, and we'll have to build a full suite. Pretty quickly, the whole vision of the company came together from there. And it was really a combination of the vision that Larry had of running software on the web. He was very convinced that he used to joke with me in the early days of NetSuite. Well, you know, we had mainframes and then we had client server, and the next stage is web applications. And that's how people are going to run software for the next 1,000 years. I don't know what's going to happen after that, but for the next 1,000 years. So he had an enormous commitment back in 1998 to the idea of web-based software. So it was the combination of that idea, the idea of starting with accounting, which he said that's the core of a business and that's what we should start with. And then I'd say sort of my contribution was this notion we wanted to do more and build really a complete business system. What we talk about now is sort of everything you need to grow a business all in one place.
What was that like for you? Because at the time, web-based software, you know, I don't, it's so hard, and I'm not a software guy, but even remembering, like, that was kind of like, huh, I'm gonna use a software via the web and share information.
Right. I mean, that was definitely the question mark. And Larry was 100% convinced. I would say I was going along for the ride a little bit because, again, my real focus was on, you know, what we were going to deliver to users. And interestingly, just a few months later, I was at his house for a party and Steve Jobs was there and he came over and knew who I was, which was surprise number one. And number two, he said, yeah, Larry is really excited about this accounting in a web browser. I mean, does anybody want to do accounting in their web browser? And I kind of shrugged and said, I don't know. Larry seems convinced. but it was just, I swear it was just a couple weeks later that we got our company, which was called NetLedger at the time. We sort of started with the first product, which was starting with accounting. We were running on QuickBooks and we got our upload capability so that we could load our QuickBooks file into our own software and start eating our own dog food. And when I saw our business in the browser, all the metrics of how much we'd spent, how many employees we had, et cetera. And I was at home at the time. And as I saw that I could get everything I needed to know about my business in my browser anytime, anywhere, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to work.
Describe that feeling. I mean, was that just
weird feeling? Because I mean, I had put all my money into my last company. We had no money left. I invested something like $2,000 into NetSuite because that's pretty much all we had. So this was it. If this didn't work, I was probably going back to Oracle. Now that did end up happening, but it was only, you know, I got 20 years of independence.
Yeah, you actually did end up going back to Oracle, right? Yeah. We know that from the NetSuite story, but take us back to that time when you're starting NetSuite, because even though you had Larry, I guess, was a co-founder, but you were still, it's the startup story, right? Weren't you like the office was above something? Oh, yeah. What was the story?
We were in Menlo Park, but we were right on the Atherton line. So like, you know, Atherton is the really fancy place. So that's actually where Larry lived at the time. And he suggested, you know, calling the company Atherton Software, like, we're going to be rich.
Yeah.
It was fun. I mean, we were in a little office above a hair salon next to a liquor store. There were four of us. I mean, it was a really intense time for me. In 1998, I got married. I had my first child. So we were raising a child. My wife would bring my little 6-month-old daughter in the wagon over because we lived nearby, bring sandwiches for the four of us. The hair salon below would beat loud music, and one of my partners would bang with the broom on the floor so we could get some quiet to get his programming done.
it sounds like your typical startup. And the good news, yeah. I guess, is you'll always know how old NetSuite is because you'll always know your daughter's age, yeah. Right?
Exactly. NetSuite definitely graduated along with my daughter. So. Yeah.
Both sound good. So in that time, you're in startup mode. You see this idea. You're like, wow, this could work. Was it a hard process starting to get clients?
Well, I mean, we definitely leveraged Larry. I mean, our first major kind of story was in the New York Times. And it had a picture of Larry and about Larry starting a web-based sort of software startup. So that helped attract a loyal cadre of early adopters. And we were charging $4.99 a month, but we might as well have been charging nothing because I know there was the numbers of companies we'd need to get to break even. Now you got to realize this is in 1999. So people weren't super concerned about that, but we did get, I'd say, hundreds of companies within the first few days of launching the first version of NetLedger, logging in, uploading their QuickBooks files and trying it out. And it went from there. It was a pretty cool adoption curve as we built more sophistication into the software. And we got, obviously, some of the later adopters to jump on the bandwagon. And it was fortunate that there was definitely a trend, obviously, towards running software on the web. And Mark Benioff was out there with Salesforce.com making a lot of noise, though they did start 3 months or so after us. But, you know, so the latecomers, but he helped out in a big way. I mean, I give him a huge amount of credit for just turning people's eyes towards this future way of running things that, as Larry says, still has 9,980 years of legs in it.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Do you think?
Yeah, 980. Sorry. Well, maybe he's upped it now. He tends to double down. Maybe it's
he's been right a lot, so I wouldn't question him. But do you feel the same way that this is how things will continue to go, at least the way you're running it right now for that long of a period of time, or something new might come along? Or
I don't know what it would be. Servers on Mars, Larry's friend Elon Musk is probably prepared for that. the solar system internet. I think the idea that you don't have to run your software, someone else can, that doesn't seem like something that's ever going to back off of in terms of these more complex systems. A system like NetSuite, you know, which helps you run all aspects of your business, even in a relatively small company of 20 employees or 30 employees, you have a lot of people using that same system with that same database. That's complex, and it's not really something that a company should have to worry about, especially a company that's not a software company.
Yeah. You know?
And so I think that's here to stay. Certainly for my lifetime and my children's lifetime. And that's pretty much all I worry about.
Yeah. It's hard to think. I mean, just when you think about it, but how much has changed in such a short period of time with technology. But you're a software guy. You know, you said you've always wanted to build software. So when you launched and it sounded like you got a lot of clients coming on board right away. Were there a lot of sleepless nights? Were you worried about the software actually working?
Well, there were sleepless nights where we had to make the software work. I mean, one of the most exciting early days was when we went from, I guess it was probably version 1 to version 2, and we had to upgrade everybody. And this is the whole thing. I mean, what we were learning very quickly, because we were veteran software developers who were used to sort of making something and then releasing it, throwing it over the wall, and then it's their problem, you know, and you go on to the next version. That's, you know, the old way. The new way was that you were running a service. And that night, it could not have become more clear that we were running a service, because we had problems with the upgrade and we were up literally all night, all four of us, trying to patch things up and make sure that by morning time, East Coast, everybody was up and running. And we successfully did that. But that was definitely a shocker.
Yeah, we're there. Yeah,
we're doing something really different than what we were doing before.
Yeah. In terms of those days and the rapid growth that you had, what were some of the challenges you faced that you have to get over with rapid growth?
Well, this ties to what I'd say to sort of all entrepreneurs. We were fortunate in that over our 18-year history of being an independent company and now still our 22-year history, we stayed very true to that vision we had in the first 5 minutes of the company's history, which was that we were going to build a system to run a business. We were going to start with accounting and we were going to run it on the web so that you could use it anytime, anywhere, and not have to worry about running your software. And that's exactly where we are now. In fact, since the Oracle acquisition, I think we've really been able to double down on those companies, the kind of the original vision of those very fast-growing companies that outgrow their initial accounting package and need something more. And sticking with that vision through those years, even when you get pulled in other directions, I think was critically important for us, and it's critically important for all businesses. I mean, the worst thing you can do is keep saying that you have that original vision, but actually doing something different. If you're going to do something different, you have to make a clean break with the past. Kind of like we did when we went from, you know, building, I mean, it was a new company, but it was the same people. But we went from building web-based interactivity software to building basically accounting software is what we started with. Larry used to joke because in the same year, I'd moved down from the city, I'd gotten married, I'd have a kid, and had a kid, and now I was building accounting software. And he was like, how do you like it now? That's not bad. It's software, you know, and I was solving a problem that I really felt needed to be solved. So it was okay.
And you had met, you said you met Larry, I guess. How'd you meet him? You said you were in college, right?
Or was this? You know, in typical Larry fashion at my alma mater, the previous year he had not been hiring from there. But one person came.
Harvard. I'll let everyone know.
Harvard. It was a school in Boston. Actually, in Cambridge. Anyway, so he hired one person from Harvard the year before, and he really liked him. And he said, oh, these Harvard people must be pretty good. So the next year, he hired half of the graduating computer science class from Harvard. That's how I met him in the course of that interview process. And Larry would interview everybody coming into Oracle, and for a very, very long time, especially every technical person coming into Oracle. And he slated me for the core database team, which is like, you know, that was the inner sanctum of the engineering team, but they didn't really want me because I didn't know C, which was the programming language. And Larry was like, oh, he'll learn it in a week. It'll be fine. But I didn't really like it there that much. I mean, it's the amazing technologists. They do incredible things. But I wanted to build software that was closer to the user. My dream had always been to build software that people use every day, that really they use, that hands-on they're using it. And at the time, 1 year after I started at Oracle, Mark Benioff started the Macintosh Group, as it was called at the time, not Mac. And, you know, it was just, you know, the Mac was only a few years old. And they just became powerful enough to run database software. And so his vision was making database software really accessible to users, making it really easy to build a database, making it really easy to build an application on top of a database. So I was really attracted to that and went over to the Mac group. And I think that notion that Mark had and that I had back at Oracle in 1988, that powerful systems should be easy to use, that they should be democratized, that it should be possible to have very sophisticated capabilities, but in a way that's easy to access. that sort of animated me through my entire career. Our first ad in the heady 1999 days where you put up billboards on 101, which have now returned, the same 101 billboards. Of course, nobody's seeing them right now, but yeah. Our first ad for Annette Ledger at the time was a baby in a fighter jet. Basically, the idea that, you know, as a small company, you could have this incredible power. That's been that, you know, and again, I'd say sticking with that vision of what you want to do for the world and then carrying that through over many years, even when you get pulled in many different directions, is critical to success.
Yeah, it sounds like you have always known at least your personal mission and in what you wanted to do, which is a lot of people don't. I mean, in terms you wanted to make.
Okay. You know, I got lucky in that regard. You talked about luck. I got lucky in that the thing that I really wanted to do was what I was able to carry forward with. And it doesn't have to be the same. Again, I say that about a company. You don't have to have the same vision for the entirety of your company. Pivoting is risky because you're going to leave people behind and that's hard. But the worst thing you can do is that mushy middle of where you are sort of essentially pivoting, but you don't tell anybody and you don't change the vision. And then that's when I think you run into problems. So it's okay to change, but just really make that change in a sort of unified, complete way.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of people who say, I'm going to make this change and, you know, but you want to hold on to what you were doing. You believe in that and that affects you or can affect your entire business success. It could make another idea not work.
Well, when you're small, you don't have the opportunity of trying to do two things at once, typically. And, you know, one of the things that was great about how we approached our growth was that we rapidly figured out that our biggest customers are going to obviously have a lot of pull and demands on what we want to do, but they might not be actually, the requests that they have might be different than what the core or massive users have. How do we handle that? So we worked really hard on being able to kind of insulate ourselves in terms of being able to really keep the product roadmap very focused on the core of our market and yet have an ability to serve individual needs that our larger customers would have, because there's no doubt your larger customers bring in a lot of resources that you need to grow the company. So I think that balancing act is a critical one. That allure of constantly being pulled up market, that can be great if, and I used to joke at some points in the history of NetSuite when I felt we were getting pulled a little too much up market, I'd say, well, yeah, our original vision was a million companies paying us $5 a month, and now it's five companies paying us $1 million a month. But otherwise, it's the same.
Yeah. And it's amazing. You know, you actually, I had on our podcast last week or this week's episode airing is Ali Webb from Drybar, which is a NetSuite client. And reading over your list, a lot of people who have built incredible businesses from the ground up and most likely probably used your software just from the start and are still to this day, which is incredible because it sounds like you've got over 25,000 clients now, or I'm not sure what.
Close to that, yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the benefits of saying you're going to run the systems for them on the web is that you build it on scalable architecture and it can scale as the company scales. It's, on the other hand, you know, if they're running the software themselves, that's what typically happens. They're running their low-end accounting software and then they just run out of horsepower for the size of their company. So that's why we're able to serve these companies and we built more sophisticated capabilities to help them as they grow. But fundamentally, they can scale on our infrastructure because we're running an infrastructure that together is, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars of revenue a month if you put all the companies together. So we could certainly handle a mere $1 billion. So that's, you know, that's why we have some very large companies running on NetSuite that, as you said, ran on it from the beginning.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is the best version of LinkedIn for sales professionals. And now, get ready to exceed your 2021 sales goals with the help of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. The best salespeople know that closing deals is about understanding your customers' needs and building relationships. It's time to reimagine in-person selling and cold calling for the digital world. And I can personally attest, I love LinkedIn. I've been on the platform since 2004, and it's been an incredible help in building my businesses. So now, tap tap into the power of LinkedIn's 700 million plus member network. LinkedIn Sales Navigator gives you 20 monthly email messages, lead recommendations, unlimited searches, actionable insights and news, and access to free courses on LinkedIn Learning. Targeting the right prospects and decision makers, unlocking 15% more pipeline from sourced opportunities, 17% lift when saving leads on Sales Navigator, and 42% larger deal sizes. As the world adapts to new working habits, sellers must also shift tactics to stay ahead. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is here to help sales professionals do just that. Start your 60-day free trial of LinkedIn Sales Navigator today by going to linkedin.com/happens. That's linkedin.com/happens to start your 60-day free trial of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. linkedin.com/happens.
And our next sponsor.
No one is great at something the first time they try it. And if you're unfamiliar with investing, getting started can be intimidating. Wealthfront does the work for you, so you can invest like an expert from the beginning. Wealthfront creates automated investment portfolios of diversified, low-cost index funds that basically are personalized just for you. To open your account, all you need is 3 minutes and $500 to invest. There are no manual trades, no watching the stock market, and no more managing the detail. Wealthfront's technology does it for you based on inputs you control. Right now, you can visit wealthfront.com/HSH to get your first $5,000 managed for free for life. That's wealthfront.com/HSH to start growing your savings. Go to wealthfront.com/HSH and get started today. And we're back. For yourself in the business, what was the impetus to, I guess, sell the business to Oracle?
Well, it was really, I mean, I like to give myself about a 1/3 credit for the idea of NetSuite and Larry kind of gets, if you think of the three big ideas, which were sort of start with accounting, build it on the web, and build it into a suite, I might get some credit for the last one. You know, Larry stayed very involved in the company. His vision carried through, and he has a bigger vision for Oracle that revolves around enterprise applications, including smaller enterprises. And so in that vision, it made sense to bring the companies together after we'd been incubated for 18 years. At the time, I think it was a masterstroke to say, let's create a company and really the first cloud business applications company that made it to this day that will really from the ground up, from day one, be thinking only about how to deliver from the cloud. And so those, you know, a few months, year in or so when we're staying up all night to get the next version running, you know, that's an example of how it was existential for us to make sure we got web-based software right. And so I think that that's sort of what was going on in his head. At the, you know, over the many years, he eventually got much of Oracle thinking cloud-like. And Oracle built its entire enterprise suite of applications from scratch over again, like NetSuite, built entirely for the cloud. So by 2016, I think he felt that the host wouldn't reject the organ if we got the two companies together. And that's turned out to be true. I mean, we have just hugely thrived as part of Oracle.
How's it been for you personally with the change?
Well, I won't deny it. It's great having your own company that you founded. Our ticker symbol was N, and that was great. And I'm so happy I got that opportunity over many years. There's no doubt that there's a loss there, but you adapt. And I've loved being part of Oracle, actually. I mean, a lot of the things that I was able to do, I can do even better now. And we're innovating faster than ever before. We have enormous resources. We're able to take advantage of some incredible things going on at Oracle. When I got back to Oracle, I mean, you couldn't have convinced me with any, no matter how hard you tried, you could not have convinced me that Oracle was building to be a leader in business application user experience. But the team they have at Oracle now working on that and the things that are coming out from Oracle are amazing. And we're taking advantage of that. I mean, we don't even, you know, as a smaller part of Oracle, we don't necessarily have that same level of resources to attack user experience like the large Oracle can. So we've partnered very, very closely with them. And you're going to see some amazing stuff coming out both from the or in the Oracle enterprise applications in NetSuite over the coming years. And so that's been extremely gratifying and something I totally did not expect coming back into the mothership.
Yeah. And how about with the entire integration with your employees and team? It seems like from what I've read and heard and everything I've seen with how you guys have thrived, that it's actually gone really well.
It absolutely has. I mean, I think that Oracle had done a lot of acquisitions by the time they came along to NetSuite, which was sort of their largest or maybe tied for their largest with PeopleSoft. And they were, you know, really experienced at it. And I give a huge amount of credit to Mark Hurd, who at the time, the late Mark Hurd, who at the time said, you know, the first thing we're going to do is the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. And so they kept us quite independent initially, allowed us to, and really, really focused us on the market that we were best at. And that's been great. The focus on these companies that are just outgrowing their first accounting package, in some case that are just starting and that are growing to ultimately be hundreds of millions of revenue, that segment and a laser focus on that segment has been hugely helpful and has allowed us to make our service better. And I've always believed from the beginning, even when I thought that big companies had these systems, I thought that Fusion, which is Oracle's enterprise applications, I thought that existed. It didn't at the time. That I knew that the solution was not going to take big company applications and try to scale them down to small companies. That never works. I knew it had to be, there had to be a separate system. And I think that's still very true. You can't have a system that's going to serve the largest multinational Fortune 500 companies and also serve that little startup above the hair salon next to the liquor store. And so I think that the Oracle strategy of having two major application suites, one that's very, very tightly knit, because ours is really, you wouldn't even call it a suite, despite the fact it's calling NetSuite. It is one system. It's one application. Everybody logs into the same thing. That's great for those small and medium-sized companies. A bigger company needs something that's a little bit more modular, and they'll buy like a financial system and a customer experience system. So that approach of two different suites, but that share a lot of technology and approaches, because some of the things are the same. When you're doing an expense report for a small company or doing an expense report for a large company, you have the same desires as a user. I don't want to do an expense report. So, I mean, the solution there is like the elimination of the expense report. And that's true both for small companies and for big companies. And so I think the overall strategy of serving all size businesses with these two different application suites is sort of optimal.
Yeah. I'm curious, you know, you said you had that conversation going back to the beginning of NetLedger, now NetSuite, now Oracle NetSuite. You had called up Larry, right? And you said, this is the idea I had. And he said, you know what? He had the same idea. And he said, if I was going to be doing something right now, that's what I would be doing. If someone was to call you today and ask that same question, what would you say?
Is anyone listening?
I'm listening here.
I'd probably say, maybe I can help you out, kind of like Larry did with me. I'm super committed to the stuff we're doing. I'm so excited about the stuff we're doing at NetSuite. The next generation of NetSuite technology, I think, is going to blow everybody away. And I'm very, very involved in the design of that and helping build the teams. And I'm fortunate in that regard is that I kind of get to reduce, you know, usually what happens is a software application dies a long, slow, painful death, and other companies build new things that take over. But we want to sort of eat our young here and do the, I call it the heart transplant in the moving ambulance, and be the one that disrupts ourselves. And so I look at, you know, making NetSuite as vital in 20 years from now as it is now, you know, a little over 20 years from its founding. And that's an exciting opportunity. And I definitely credit Larry and his vision. I mean, again, I'm working very closely with Larry like I was at the beginning of NetSuite. And so that makes it feel on a day-to-day basis a lot of connection to those days.
Sounds like you might have to be traveling to Hawaii from what I read now to be working with Larry every day.
The power of Zoom, but you know, I'll make any kind of sacrifice I have to.
Yeah, yeah, it's so interesting. Now, was there ever a client you got, because as you said, you had now over 20,000, close to 25,000 clients. Was there ever a client you got prior where you were like, oh man, like, you know, just a personal favorite, a business you grew up with, or like that you were like, just felt, this felt great?
Yeah, a ton of them. You know, some of them are well known. We helped the Obama Foundation. I'm really, really proud and happy about that. But some of them are, you know, yeah, I mean, people are starting businesses all the time, and friends, family members, et cetera. And I get to be a part of that. Hey, my wife uses NetSuite. She has a reusable shopping bag company run entirely on NetSuite. It's like a full cycle NetSuite implementation. She sells through Amazon. She sells on her website. It automatically ships out by Fulfilled from Amazon. It all gets reconciled in NetSuite without her having to do anything. She just kind of logs in every morning and sees how her sales are going. So I get to be the technical support on that one, which is fun. And it's actually really good to see NetSuite in action on a day-to-day basis, even in your own family. So
yeah, you know, I would imagine that's probably your most important account. You know,
market bags always gets the attention that it needs. I mean, but you know, again, they're regular. My wife is always like, "No, I don't want to be treated special," and I'm like, "No."
Yeah, you know, okay.
I was just planning to do a crossword puzzle right now. I can help you out.
Where do you think you've seen, what I love about your business too, is that you get to see so many of these entrepreneurs and their businesses start. What do you think about nowadays being an entrepreneur and the future of it? Because I remember coming out of school in the early 90s, you almost looked down upon as an entrepreneur. Like what? What do you think of the future of entrepreneurism?
I assume that it has existed from day one, before, as soon as you could sort of communicate, I think the entrepreneur started. You need this club. This is a much better club. And goodness, the inventor of the wheel, that was probably the Google of the time.
Amazing.
So I'm involved in a bunch of companies just as an advisor, and friends that are starting companies, and relatives that are starting companies. My niece is starting a really cool company for relationship, an app that helps with relationships. I mean, it's really fun to see. I will say that probably my days of staying up all night are over. So it's nice to know that there's a next generation of people that will stay up all night if necessary to make their dreams a reality. It's exciting to watch. And it's exciting to be part of it with NetSuite, again, to have this sort of front row seat to a lot of these great companies. And I really feel that this sort of discontinuity we've had in 2020 is going to lead to some incredible new technologies and incredible new companies, you know, as sort of a thousand flowers bloom, hopefully next year and beyond. And I'm really excited to, you know, be a spectator for some of those at the same time as I continue to make sure that we're building the, you know, the best system to help them grow.
Yeah, it really seems to me, from talking to you, I sense as much passion now for NetSuite as most likely when you were first getting going.
Yeah, except I'm definitely not staying up all night.
I
stay up all night for a variety of reasons. I mean, I had an infant.
Yeah, exactly.
For that reason also, no. No infants. No infants in the plans, or if they, you know, when they happen in a few years, I will not be staying up all night for them. I mean, again, we've learned so much over 20 years to be able to take that learning and reapply it and kind of do some things now like you would have done then if you knew what you know now.
Yeah.
Is really fun.
Can you talk a little bit about, in the time we have left, you've been really passionate about giving back. Mm-hmm. Which is so nice to see, especially people who have been as successful as you within the tech world. And what are you doing giving back, and what are your passions around that?
Well, I mean, as soon as we achieved some success with NetSuite, and NetSuite went public in 2008, you know, my wife and I were immediately like, what do we do with all this money?
Right.
We want to give away a bunch of it. And so we sort of, you know, immediately started thinking about a strategy of what we wanted to do personally. But at the same time, I also saw that, and this had been true early on. And again, I'll give credit to Mark Benioff as thinking about philanthropy, corporate social responsibility from the very, very beginning of the company. And I, you know, I was close with Mark and I was hearing this directly all the time. So at Net, I wanted to do the same thing at NetLedger and NetSuite. But it was really when we started to, you know, get pretty to be a decent scale and size that we could really offer something different. And so on a personal basis, my wife and I decided to focus on cancer research because our family has been very affected by cancer, and children's health and education, starting obviously with what we learned from our own children and hopefully giving other people in the world some of the benefits and advantages that our kids had. And from a NetSuite sort of professional side, I saw, okay, well, what are we doing for businesses? And could we leverage that to do good? Well, what happened was, and this is, again, when NetSuite was starting to grow, my wife ran the local PTA, and they were running their PTA on two copies of QuickBooks. It was crazy, and it was sort of a mess. And I was like, well, maybe the reason they had two copies of QuickBooks is because one person in their house wanted to do the donation accounting, and another person in the house wanted to do the expense accounting. I'm like, well, gee, you know, we have a system that both people can use the same system from their house. And so we implemented NetSuite at the local PTA, and it worked really well. So I thought, wow, there must be a lot of organizations that probably don't have a good handle on their finances, just like a lot of small businesses didn't when we started. Maybe we could do something for them. So that was the origin of, at the time we called it NetSuite.org, which is we gave away NetSuite to small entrepreneurial charities or social enterprises. And I think one of the best parts of the program was that we told employees, and you should use some of your time to do pro bono work to help your favorite charity that gets a grant of NetSuite be successful with NetSuite. And so we've developed that into a pretty sophisticated program now. It's Oracle NetSuite Social Impact, and it's called Suite Pro Bono because we put Suite in front of everything. And we have a sort of a menu of options that employees can choose to help with setting up dashboards or help with, you know, small custom applications, NetSuite's platform. We do hackathons. We brought the Obama Foundation in for one of those actually in Chicago where employees helped with a particular problem that they had. So we bring in organizations and help them. And this, you know, employees love it. They get a chance to help great organizations. They get to see NetSuite in operation in the field because a lot of people developing the software don't always get to see it. We try, but this is just another opportunity to see how NetSuite is impacting these organizations that they end up typically feeling passionate about. We think it's great for the organizations. We like to think it helps them do good better. And some great stories come out of it that help us tell the story of NetSuite. And so that's one of the things I'm most proud of in everything we've done at NetSuite. We have a very robust nonprofit industry vertical that thrives off of that because those charities sometimes become big charities, just like small businesses sometimes become big businesses. And we've ended up providing software at great discounts, but not necessarily for free, to some amazing organizations like the American Cancer Society, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, lots of really, really great charity water, Kiva, a lot of just great charities.
Well, it's great to see because, you know, when you look at it, because of your software, I'm sure a lot of those organizations grew into much larger charities where they might not have if they stayed on QuickBooks or any of those apps.
I mean, we're an enabler. I mean, ultimately, it's the entrepreneur and their team that builds the business and their great ideas and their passion and their willingness to stay up all night. But you don't want a roadblock to be that you can't get good information about your systems, that you don't have control over what everybody's doing, that you're not collaborating effectively, or that the things are a lot more manual and you're wasting a lot of money and time. I mean, you just don't want those to be your roadblocks on your road to success.
Yeah. Last question before I let you go is talking about those young entrepreneurs who are willing to stay up all night and know they have to. What advice, as someone who's been as successful as you within growing a business, starting a business, what advice could you give to some of our listeners, you know, who are just out there right now starting their own businesses or thinking about starting their own businesses?
Well, I think I'd say the first advice would be to do it because the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And so, you know, it's funny, I'm working with my daughter in one of her classes on developing a business plan for a prospective fashion business. And it brings back to me how much work is involved. So take that first step, but know that it's 1,000 miles and that there's a lot of work and a lot of planning and a lot of assumptions that you have to make. And you're not going to feel like you're prepared to do that. You know, my daughter's like, I don't know anything about this. And I'm like, welcome to the world of entrepreneurship. But you just try it. You get out there, you do it, and you learn, and you make mistakes, and you fix them. And stay true to that vision. You're going to get diverted a little bit. You're going to have to bob and weave towards that North Star. But make sure that you're always sort of making forward progress. And if you need to, you need to paddle back towards the current that goes where you want to go. And having always keeping that in mind and making sure that your team always has that as the what they wake up with and what they go to bed with is that vision. And the vision really comes down to, you know, who are you trying to target? What problem are you trying to solve for them? And how are you going to solve that problem? And if you have very, very crisp answers to that and a vision of what the world will be like when you succeed, then it just takes the all-nighters and you're good to go.
Yeah. And I love what you said. Just sometimes the hardest of all is just go do it, right? And jumping off the diving board.
Right.
But in any case, Evan, thank you so much for joining us today on How Success Happens. And we look forward to hearing this. And it's live now. And then, of course, on Entrepreneurs, How Success Happens. This show will be coming up in a couple weeks. And we'll look forward to hearing it there as well. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com. Or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.